@FKTwigs. So thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you guys a bit later.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional student and community productions in and around Montreal, the island also known as Jojage in Ganiagaha and Muniang in Anishinaabe, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah De A, recording from home on Thursday, December 15th, 2022. On tonight's show, revisiting some of my favorite conversations from the past year, 2022, including a guest who will be performing in just 2 weeks at Place des Arts. My guests include Amir Haidar, a Toronto-based performer who has a connection with the musical Come From Away, and it's one that goes back to its earliest days of development.
My journey with the show started in 2012. When I first immigrated to Canada, I went to Sheridan College in Oakville in Ontario, and my graduating year, they were starting this workshops of new Canadian musicals, and one of the first workshops was Come From Away. So it was the very first workshops that David and Irene, who wrote the show, had ever done. And so I'd known some form of the show since 2012. And then when I got to be a part of the Toronto production in 2017, 2018, up until the pandemic, it was such an incredible experience.
Amir is an absolutely charming guest, and I'm eager to revisit that conversation. Also on the show, one of my favorite performances from the past year, Jonathan Silver in The Covenant, an up-close look at a World War II ruse.
I mean, the power of propaganda, right? We have to be vigilant all the time. What is the media that we're consuming? Where is it coming from? Can we discern the purpose behind it? It's so easy to warp reality to your will through the media. There's countless examples of that throughout history and today. You know, it's very important to be media savvy.
Kristen Govers lives with cerebral palsy, and she documents her journey balancing ambition with daily challenges from childhood to adulthood in The Awkward Ballerina.
I wanted people to understand that despite obstacles, you can do the things you want to do. Maybe they have to be a little different, but you can do them. And so that was the whole premise of this show. And for people to understand that, you know, everybody has things. We all have things. And we all have to live with those things, whatever they are.
Remember, you can follow us for updates, images of guests, and more on Instagram at @UpstageCKUT. The Canadian Tony-winning musical Come From Away will be in town January 10th to the 15th, 2023 at Place des Arts. This is the amazing Canadian musicals that went from Toronto to Broadway, telling the true story of how a small Newfoundland town got swept up in the aftermath of the attacks on September 11th, 2001.
Everybody knows everybody else, and everybody in this room has a story about how they started that day. Welcome to the rock. If you come from away, hey! You'll probably understand about a half of what we say. Hey! They say no man's an island, but an island makes a man.
Especially when one comes from a land Newfoundland. Welcome to the rock.
That morning, I'm in the classroom.
David Hine and Irene Shankoff are writing partners and a husband and wife team. They are Canadians who co-wrote the musicals, and it's about the grounding of thousands of flights in the wake of the attacks that day. We're talking 38 planes that landed in the town of Gander. That's 7,000 passengers. Airspace was then restricted for days on end after the attacks, leaving all those people essentially stranded in the quiet but tight-knit town. But they were welcomed with open arms by the community. I've seen the touring production myself, as well as on Broadway, and it's a remarkable tale, both weaving in real and composite stories from that fateful day, and it also examines how it changed people's lives forever, for both bad and good. like the story of the trailblazing female airline captain. There's the divorced woman who meets a man on the flight, a mother who cannot get in touch with her son back home. There's local teachers and volunteers and even some animals. And as such, the actors in Come From Away have a lot of ground to cover. There are 6 male roles and 6 female roles, and each plays several characters with different accents and storylines. And so you can imagine what a challenge it is to be an understudy or a standby, the person who has to fill in when someone gets sick or has vacation or if there's an emergency. Amir Haidar is one of those talented and hardworking performers. He estimates that he has to master 20 accents in order to cover what we call a track. A track being one actor's part to play in a show. So by extension, each track in Come From Away covers several different roles. And in this upcoming touring production, Amir will cover 5 out of 6 of them. Hence, the 20 accents. Amir is from Lebanon and came to Canada to study performance in 2009, and he was on the ground for the development of the musical, as you're about to hear. We chatted earlier this month about how his passion for math helps with his work, the characters he relates to the most, and what Come From Away means to him as a relatively new Canadian, and how his family feels about his career choices. This is my conversation with Amir Haidar. Welcome, Amir, to Upstage. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
So what is this like for you, having been with the original Toronto production and then get to join a joining production like this? I'm curious because I feel like you've really been on a journey with the show.
Actually, it's really funny you ask that. My journey with the show started in 2012. When I first immigrated to Canada, I went to Sheridan College in Oakville in Ontario. And my graduating year, they were starting this workshops of new Canadian musicals. And one of the first workshops was Come From Away. So it was the very first workshops that David and Irene, who wrote the show, had ever done. And so I'd known some form of the show since 2012. And then when I got to be a part of the Toronto production in 2017, 2018, up until the pandemic, it was such an incredible experience. And now to get to do it with a brand new group of people, with a brand new company touring Canada and the US, is just another way to celebrate the show, to do it in so many different ways and iterations with so many people, and to see how far it's come and the audience it's reached is pretty wonderful.
In researching to prepare to speak with you in last week, as we were lining up our giveaway on CKUT, I was interested to see like the first productions were, or the first presentations. The first time anyone got a hand on the show was at Sheridan College. I wasn't sure if that was like normal, that a musical like that might have that in the development process. So that is so fabulous that you go all the way back to that origin point.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And, you know, Canadian musicals are picking up steam. They've always been incredible, but they always haven't had the level of advertisement and marketing and showcasing that they've had in more recent years. And Come From Away is one of those rare exceptions, but at the same time, it's opened the doors for so much more work to be showcased and show what Canadian musicals can be a part of.
You just referenced Amir coming to Canada for the first time and being a student. And I want to get to know a little bit about you because you also have an interesting, I guess, career path, because you actually have a degree in mathematics. Is that correct?
Yes, I do. So I was born and raised in Lebanon. And I grew up there. And when I told my parents that I wanted to go and study music theater after high school, they're like, you're not allowed to leave the country before you get a backup degree. And so I went to the American University of Beirut and got a Bachelor of Arts in Mathematics. And then I immigrated to Canada to study music theater at Sheridan, where I graduated in 2012. And then I started, you know, doing the actor thing and hustling and getting jobs and getting work. And I was very lucky that, you know, 5 years into trying to get a career, I got Come From Away. And during that, I've been afforded great privileges of, you know, being able to do my master's degree and being able to study for my PhD while still being able to do the show in its many forms. So I've been very, very fortunate.
The people talk about Come From Away like being a very Canadian story, and it is an international story as well, obviously, because there's a terrorism incident that kind of brings all these people from disparate places together in one place. But it's Canadian because it's about opening doors and forging connections. So do you see parallels between the fact that you know that you came from another country to a new place, and here you are getting to be a part of this musical that is about people from different corners of the world?
I absolutely identified so strongly with the show on so many dimensions, this being one of them. The show itself, you know, is about the planes that got grounded in Gander, Newfoundland during 9/11 and the aftermath of that, the few days that followed. The town of Gander is 9,000 people and they accepted 7,000 new people. So their population almost doubled over, like, in within a span of 2 hours. And the show is essentially about how people from all around the world, different places, ethnicities, religions, cultures, sexual orientations, all of that got taken in and were met with kindness. And for me, being able to relate that to my story, having immigrated to Canada and being met with this sort of multicultural, kind, open-hearted place where I am very fortunate now to call home, as well as back home in Lebanon, means a great deal to me. And I sort of, I'm like, I'm a come from away as well. And so it means doubly more to me to be a part of this show and to represent that in the show.
I can't all, you just explained that so beautifully. And I'm also touched when I think about how remarkable the musical is, because we meet people from different backgrounds, that we have characters of different extraction, let's say. We have a female airline pilot and we meet a Muslim character. And I was like, I just feel like we don't see these stories so much in big productions, big commercial musicals like that. And that's where the musical also kind of turned the page a little bit.
Absolutely. I think that I want to give credit to David Hine and Irene Sankoff, who wrote the show. There is a great level of diversity and inclusion. And speaking of subject matters that, as you said, are starting to find their footing in musical theater and in theater and in art now in a more mainstream way, whereas before it would be subversive for minorities and people who are marginalized to be at the forefront. But in speaking of a 9/11 story, it was very important when the world and so much energy was so divided and so contentious and potentially so negative, for there to be a story of not just kindness, but inclusion and the lack of caring for people's specific identity factors or identifiers, but more of humanity as a solid framework and community for everybody. And so that's why I think the musical is so, but that's part of why the musical is so beautiful, is because everybody gets an equal slice of the pie.
So well said. Amir Haidar is performing in Come From Away, which is coming to town next month at Place des Arts, Salle Wilfrid Pelletier. And you are a standby. Is that how we say it in the parlance?
Yes.
On standby? A standby?
I am a standby, yes.
Because I'm thinking of airlines, a story about planes getting grounded and how people fly standby. And I just realized that word exists in these two different worlds. So tell me about what that means for you as a performer and how you get integrated into the cast. Is that, how does that work?
So as a standby, I do not perform in the show every night. I am one of six standbys in the production, all of whom are absolutely incredible. And once you come see the show, you'll see the cast is 12 actors, six male, six female, on stage essentially the entire time, each playing more than one character, each doing their own. We move the sets and we do essentially everything on stage. And of these six males or six females, each standby covers five out of the six. And so anytime there is someone calls out, whether it's because of an illness or a scheduled vacation or an emergency or any sort of reason that they would not be doing the show, we would step in and do that particular track. And so we would need to know not just the lines, but, you know, they all sing different vocal parts. They have different choreography. They have different things that they move and things that they do on stage. It's a very intricate sort of puzzle the show. And so to know five different tracks each is a big puzzle to have in your head with very minimal rehearsal and time on stage. And so a part of what I love about my job is I get to play different characters depending on who I'm going on for and what track I'm going on for. So to have that sort of versatility and to be able to slot into the show and play almost every one of what I could potentially play is pretty wonderful.
We were also talking about diversity there and that all the characters, their passengers, airline crew, to the people on the ground in Gander who are welcoming them in. So I'm mind boggled that you can keep that all together. I mean, obviously that's part of the job, but the show in particular really requires so much. It's accent changes and as you're saying, different choreography. Does that an extra special challenge for you?
Oh, absolutely. I have to give credit to all standbys and understudies and swings in the theater industry and music theater specifically that requires, you know, singing and dancing. They're absolute heroes. And I'm so grateful that I get to be a part and in that company and a part of that community. And it is definitely a very added challenge for two reasons. One, there is so much information to keep in your head and to keep in your body. More or less, and be able to slot in. So for example, there are two actors who play a couple in the show, a gay couple in the show, and I cover both of those tracks. So there are times where I'm just talking to another version of myself on stage because I get to play both of those characters. The other part of what's challenging about it is that one of the comforting elements of being an actor on stage and doing a show 8 shows a week is you get to form muscle memory. And so your body sort of gets used to one way of doing things, the way you move on stage, the choreography, all of that. But as a standby, you don't really get that because in each given moment, you can move one of five different ways. And so it really is a challenge of the mind and a sort of focus and control of the body in the way that you are able to really focus on how you move and how you execute every performance.
That is Amir Haidar, and we're talking about Come From Away. He'll be performing in that this coming January. So you talked about the body, you talked about the relationship that each character has towards one another, but there's also the accents. Can you talk a bit about that? Because the Newfoundland accent in particular, I think, is quite challenging. I watched an English cast do a performance, and I was like, oh, these are people from the British Isles, but they're not quite nailing it.
You know, it's fascinating because, you know, people who grew up, when I was a part of the Toronto production, people who grew up in Canada and are Canadian really have an understanding of the nuances of a Newfoundland accent to a certain degree, because they sort of grew up with it in their vernacular. Mm-hmm. As someone who didn't grow up here, I grew up in Lebanon, I did not know that. And so it was quite a bit more challenging for me. But between the five tracks I cover, I do about 20 to 25 accents in the show. And so we have, of course, an incredible accent coach, Joel Goldies, who is fantastic and is so meticulous with the way that he trains us and that he follows up with us and gives us notations over how every accent is done. But to be able to switch between them very quickly, that is a part of the actor's job, but with the degree that it is required in the show, there's a level of nuance that is very important, because as opposed to what, you know, the stereotype can be sometimes of music theater, this show is very grounded in reality. All of the characters in it are based on real people, and the events actually happen. And so one of the brilliant things about the show is that it really gives a sense of realism through the fun, through the tears, through the joy. There is a sense of this actually happened. These are people are real. And so the accents cannot be over the top or caricatures or inaccurate. They need to be very specific. And we're very lucky to have in our company our accent coach and stage managers and resident directors who really work hard with us to make sure that everything is very particular and specific.
Amir, I'm wondering if you have a favorite character out of the five tracks that you're going to be, which doesn't mean five roles, it means more roles than that. But is there any personage that stands out for you that you really relish playing?
I will tell you, the way the show is written, I'm going to give you the diplomatic answer first.
Yeah, fair. Written,
everybody gets their chance to shine. Everybody has a beautiful arc. Everybody has so much brilliant material that they really are so equal in stepping into them. There are no bigger or smaller parts in the show. Having said that, as a queer immigrant who grew up, you know, in the Middle East and immigrated to Canada. The Kevin Jay and Others track, which essentially the two main roles that are played here are Kevin Jay, who is a gay New Yorker, and Ali, who is a an Egyptian chef. And sort of dealing with how Muslims and Middle Easterners and Arabs were treated in the aftermath of 9/11. Both those characters together in one track hit home for me because personally I've experienced some version of both those things. And so there is some personal connection to that when I get to play that particular track, but I'm trying to make that even across the board in all tracks I play.
That's so diplomatic and fair of you. I hope this isn't presumptuous, but that was what I thought you were going to say. I was prepared to be surprised, but I think what you've just said is really so beautiful and links us right back to what people connect with the play so much, is that it represents, as you said, real people with real stories that have been transformed by this experience. When do we get to see you on stage in Montreal?
So in Montreal, you get to see me in the Sunday show. I am very excited that I get to go on. And, you know, it isn't common for standbys to know so much in advance that they're going on, but I am very fortunate that I get to go on the Sunday that we're there. We're there for an entire week. We're there for quite a few performances in that 1 week. So it's pretty condensed, but the Sunday performance I am going on as the boyfriend of the track that I just set. And I actually really love that. There's a song in there that I absolutely love singing. So I'm very fortunate I get to do that.
I'm thinking back to your parents telling you that you had to get your degree before you could go off and study musical theater. And you did get your degree in mathematics back home. And what do they say nowadays, seeing you being so successful on stage and in your career?
Well, you know, they still are wondering when I'm going to use that degree in math. And no, but seriously, you know, what's funny is that I actually get to use it quite a bit in the show. Math helps a lot with being a standby or an understudy because you have to keep track of so much. And there's so many mind games and formulas and puzzle pieces that I have to fit in. So it really has come in handy. I try not to tell them that, though, because I don't want to just do right. But my mom and my brother and my aunt, who are my like three biggest champions, came to see the show in Toronto when I was on. And it was very emotional to get to have, you know, my family see that show and me being a part of something so monumental. And I'm very excited and I'm very fortunate that they're coming back to see it in Montreal as well.
How fabulous. That's amazing. I was going to say, I need math myself just to keep track of all the roles that you're doing. And then we think back to math and the connection with music, and that you must have been so musical from an early age to be someone who's good enough to get a math degree, right?
Well, I've always been, I have to give credit to my parents and my extended family. My uncle and my mom and my dad and my aunt really grew up loving music and theater. And so I grew up just like a part of all of that. And so musically, theatrically, I was so in love with the magic of it that was where my brain went. And because I really did love math, like I can't, you know, I really, really did love math. And so the parts of that that intersected specifically within music theater, because music is very mathematical, comedy is very mathematical, the staging that we have, because it's so intricate, is so mathematical. So I'm very lucky that I get to do something that has both intersect.
Can't wait to see you in Montreal, Amir. Thank you so much for taking the time to join Upstage.
Thank you for having me. This was awesome.
That was the gifted Amir Haidar, Toronto-based actor who you can catch on January 15th at Place des Arts, Salle Wilfrid Pelletier, for the closing show of the Come From Away run in Montreal. Amir might have a degree in math, but he also has a BFA in musical theater and is pursuing his PhD at the Center for Drama at the University of Toronto. Amir is on standby for this coming production. It will be in town January 10th to the 15th. And of course, he's performing on the 15th, guaranteed. You can get more information and your tickets at evenco.ca. I'm Sarah DeA, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come, a chat with a first-time playwright who transposes her story of disability and perseverance into a one-woman show with ballet at its heart. Our next interview brings us to June 1944 in Bohemia, modern-day Czechoslovakia, at a concentration camp. I spoke with actor Jonathan Silver live on November 3rd as he was gearing up to perform in The Covenant as a prisoner at that camp. Here is the start of our conversation. To set the scene, members of the International Red Cross are welcomed to a small village. The people running it purport that the town is a haven for European Jews in the midst of the Second World War, but it's all a cover for something way more sinister, as we find out in The Covenant. It is an award-winning new-ish show by Montreal playwright Alice Brayson. You might remember Alice's name coming up. We spoke with her mom, Anne Lambert, a couple weeks ago. Anne is a playwright who has segued into mystery novels. They are both co-founders of Théâtre West End, a relatively new company that is producing lots of interesting work. This production coming up is directed by Murdoch Sean, and it is, as I mentioned, presented by Théâtre West End, but happening at the Siegel Center Studio coming November 15th to December the 3rd. And it is, in fact, based on a true story. Jonathan Silver is in the cast. He was part of a staged reading of the show early on. Jonathan was just starring in Fox Finder. He's performed on stage and film and video games as well. Welcome to Upstage, Jonathan. Thanks so much for being here.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
So what a story this is, and it is based on reality, something that actually happened. I know you're familiar with the story, having worked on one of these earlier staged readings that Alice put together. Tell me a little bit more about this chapter of World War II history.
Absolutely. So as you said, this play takes place in the concentration camp called Theresienstadt, and that was established in the Czech Republic during the Second World War. And the thing about this camp was that it served as propaganda for the Nazis. They set up this camp to show the Red Cross, as you said, and to show the world that they were attempting to convince the world that they were, in fact, treating the Jews very well. And for the people that they sent to this camp themselves, they told people that they were going to a spa, that this place was a spa, that this place was a retreat. And, of course, it was anything but. Conditions were horrible. Everything below the surface of the veneer that they applied to it in order to present this lie to the world was, of course, horrible. And I play Peter, who is based on a real person. The real person's name was Paul Epstein. And my character is established as the mayor of this town. And so it is my job to essentially, I was bamboozled, my character's bamboozled into helping the Nazis to create this lie, this piece of propaganda for the world.
That's such an interesting line to walk and to get into the mind of Peter. And what did he really think that what he was doing was for the best?
Absolutely, and certainly that's addressed in this play. My character, I figure that if we're able to pull this off, if we're able to convince the Red Cross that this place is actually a paradise, this is a wonderful place to be, then we serve a function to the Nazis. They have no reason to send us east to the labor camps that exist there. And of course, we're all familiar with what happened at camps like Auschwitz and Birkenau. And so the characters in this play are aware not that those are necessarily death camps, but that they are at least aware that they are labor camps, and they know that where they are right now, for all its horrors, is a better place to be than those places. And so, for my character, I really justify for myself, and that's part of the work that I have on this character is to fully buy into that in order to save the people that live in this camp, we have to sell this lie as best as we can. And the real tragedy here is that in the true story of this, after the people of Theresienstadt, after the Red Cross came that first visit, and they were somewhat successfully convinced that this was, if not a paradise, then at least a decent place for these people to live. What happened after was that the Nazis then filmed a propaganda video, rendering the people involved in this, what they called the embellishment, redundant. They no longer needed to keep them there, to keep convincing the Red Cross. Now they had this film that they could show people. And that film, you could find it online. It's really striking to watch because it is unfortunately, a masterful piece of propaganda. You watch this film, and it it does, it's convincing is the horrible part about it. You see people, children in the street, you know, dancing, playing. They put on a play for the Red Cross when they arrived, and it was all scripted. Every single element of this was scripted, and we addressed that in the play as well. Even just, okay, at this moment, this 7-year-old girl is going to walk by, and she's carrying a rake, and she'll be smiling and laughing. Every element, they knew exactly the path that they would take them on. To convince them that the Jews and people living in this camp were being treated well.
That is the voice of Jonathan Silver, who incarnates the role of Peter in The Covenant, coming to the Siegel Center studio November 15th to December the 3rd. Even though these events are set some 70, 80, almost 80 years now it still feels fresh, unfortunately, because we're not only talking about anti-Semitism, we only have to think about what's been happening with Kanye West, how long it's taken for people to call out his blatant anti-Semitism, and how it's a signal to others who hold these beliefs. It's also Holocaust Education Week. It happens to be right this very week. And we get this feeling that people are not, we're losing that connection to this part of history. Is that part of the conversation as you're getting ready to put the show on?
Absolutely. You know, it's a cliche, somewhat of a cliche to say, you know, that you produce art and about the Holocaust in order to never forget. But it is true. And recent events are showing us why that is the case. You know, you have a resurgent extremist right-wing element in society that seems to be getting some kind of a foothold in various parts of the world. And stories like this remind us about the horrors that such ideology can bring to society, to people. As you said, of course, yeah, what's happening right now, this resurgence in anti-Semitism is horrible. It's something that you know, I'm proud to be part of a piece of art that reminds us as to where these things can lead. These things that, you know, it seemed not benign at first, but at least harmless. To have somebody, not harmless certainly, but, you know, to have the things that someone like Kanye West were saying not so long ago, people somewhat laughed at the things he was saying, but we're seeing since then, I think just now, I just read an article that there are threats against synagogues in New Jersey that have happened right now, and people are saying that this is linked to the rise in acceptance of anti-Semitism. It's certainly a timely play.
It's absolutely abhorrent to hear these things, but it makes, as you're saying, the play more relevant than ever, unfortunately. I really liked also what you were saying about the propaganda the Nazis were setting up, that they were making this video. Your character becomes complicit in this because he's hoping that this is how he's going to save lives. But it also links us back to fake news today, this idea of warping, telling lies, but masquerading as truth. And that also feels very, very relevant.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, this is, I mean, the power of propaganda, right? We have to be vigilant all the time. What is the media that we're consuming? Where is it coming from? Can we discern the purpose behind it? It's so easy to warp reality to your will through the media. There's countless examples of that throughout history and today. You know, it's very important to be media savvy.
Like many Canadians, your own family tree was impacted by the Holocaust. Can you tell us a bit about that and what that brings to you as a performer, whether that's a burden or a challenge to rise to, what that's like for you?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's whole parts of my family tree that unfortunately didn't make it to Canada during the war. I was very lucky. You know, my great-grandmother moved here essentially on a I guess what the kids would call a vibe. You know, she just had a bad feeling. And there are many, she had family members of her family that simply, you know, they didn't agree, or they thought, you know, there's a line in the play too, but also there's this prevailing feeling when these things happen, and you're hearing it now in Ukraine. This is not the kind of thing that happens here in Ukraine. This is Europe. This doesn't happen here. And the sentiment was very much the same at the time. And so, you know, certainly she made the right choice. She came here. She provided a living for her family. Actually, this person that we're talking about, my great grandmother, kind of became a part of Montreal. I suppose folklore of Montreal. She opened a store that became quite well known called Warshaw. Mm-hmm. It was on the main, and that was she was a bit of a local celebrity. Her daughter, there's a mural of her on the building still behind the pharmacy that's there now. But actually, within eyesight, her and Leonard Cohen are kind of gazing at each other for her mural and his.
That will be some
much smaller.
I'm going to have to look for that. You know, we've got two murals of Leonard Cohen, but I think the purple one on the main is my favorite, just because it's purple and it's a bit chiller looking than the other one. But nice to know that your bubby is looking back at him.
Yeah. And as far as, you know, taking that into this plan, I mean, certainly that's a conversation that we're having in the room is honoring the people. Certainly the people whom this play is based on, but also all the lives that were affected. Yeah. So it's, you know, we certainly keep that to heart.
Jonathan Silver is performing in The Covenant. One final question for you, Jonathan. It is not just set in 1944. We go back and forth through time periods, which is always a challenge. Tell me about the work that's gone into using design and using your performance to really evoke what it was like in 1944 in this tiny town.
Yeah, well, our costume design is excellent. Lighting actually, I haven't seen yet. We're about to move into the space where we'll be performing next week, so I'm very excited to see that. The set is fascinating. I don't want to give too much of it away, but it's really, really unique. It's immersive is what I would call it. It's really as far as these two different time periods jumping back and forth and how we establish that. I think it's a really cool thing that we're doing where my character and the actress playing my wife, Holly Gauthier-Frankel, we're almost competing storytellers here. My character is wanting to tell the story of what happens after we get to the camp, but her character is just at the beginning of the play says that, no, we have to look at the entire context. So she's the one that brings us back to those earlier scenes, those scenes that take place before we arrive at the camp. We have a scene in which we meet for the first time, and it's actually a beautiful love story that emerges there. And so what you have are competing storytellers. I think it'll all make sense once you see it.
Of course, it always does.
Yeah, it's really well done. Fantastic direction, fantastic acting and design. It's going to be something for sure, something to watch.
You're talking about a love story there, so I think it is also important to mention that obviously, like you put the Nazis in a play, like bummer, of course, like it is a tragedy, but there's also some dark humor here and a lot of heart, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's all about the contrast as well. And in order for the full scope of the tragedy to unfold, we have to fall in love with these characters. We have to feel for the, you know, what they're trying to accomplish here and what Peter's trying to accomplish. He really believes that this is for the best, that he's going to save these people. And the more personal story between him and his wife. So my character believes that he's going to save them through these means, she is actually, she's a doctor, she works in the clinic in the camp, so she's working to save people on a much more literal and immediate level of treating people's wounds, making sure they're well fed to the best of her abilities. It's a play of competing ideologies and competing philosophies.
Jonathan, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for taking the time to tell us about Peter and the Covenant.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
That was actor Jonathan Silver, who was an absolute standout in Alice Abramson's The Covenant, performed at the Siegel Center Studio earlier this fall. Jonathan played the role of a Jewish man imprisoned at Theresienstadt concentration camp and who was enlisted into helping the Nazis make a propaganda film for the Red Cross. The actor who played his wife, Holly Gauthier-Frankel, was also a standout in this performance. And I think for the both of them, these were two of my favorite performances all year in Montreal. I spoke with playwright Alice Abramson actually earlier this month, and she mentioned she's planning to pitch the play to other theater companies outside Montreal, so perhaps The Covenant will be set to travel. For more information on the company, you can visit them online at theatrewestend.ca. That is West, O-U-E-S-T, theatrewestend.ca, or you can also visit them on Facebook. I'm Sarah Day. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio. Coming to you from my home yet again this week, I'm looking back on some of my favorite interviews from the past year. In late August, I met a remarkable woman with a burning desire to tell her story. Meeting someone like Kristen Govers is a treat because she has a clear idea of the message she wants to share with people and the conviction and confidence to carry it out. Kristen has had cerebral palsy from birth. It's the name of a constellation of disorders that affect a person's balance, posture, and ability to move, and it can include other symptoms like hearing or speech problems. It's often diagnosed in childhood. Over the pandemic, Kristen decided it was time to document her childhood experiences. She considered maybe writing a book, then switched to a play, even though her last time on stage was at the age of 15, performing with a choir. Despite Kristen's diagnosis, her parents encouraged her to perform and participate in sports as well, though the reality of her condition and the attitudes of the people around her could be a challenge. Kristen's determination to perform and strive for excellence has continued to adulthood. As you'll hear from Kristen, she's keen to share her story with others. She lays it all out in Awkward Ballerina, a one-woman show that debuted at this year's Fringe Festival, where it was nominated for an Outstanding English Production Award. When I spoke to Kristen in late August, she was about to remount the show in her hometown of Pierrefonds in the West Island at the Salle Pauline Julien. Here is our conversation.
Welcome, Kristen, to Upstage. Thank you so much for being here.
You're very welcome.
You're coming off a successful Fringe run and gearing up to present the show again. How does that feel?
Amazing. Super excited. I can't wait to do the show again. Fringe was a great experience. And now I get to do it again and on the West Island, close to where I grew up. So it's pretty exciting.
What part of the West Island did you grow up in?
I grew up in Pierrefonds. So we're doing the show at the Salle Pauline Julien, which actually was booked before Fringe.
Oh, okay.
So, and then Fringe was just like a happy coincidence. And now I get to do it again. So I'm really excited.
Well, perfect for the hometown crowd. You had a very long dress rehearsal leading up to your big debut in Pierrefonds at the Salle Pauline Julien. Kristen, it's so lovely to have you here. As cerebral palsy is a condition that it could be different for every individual who has it. It's something that it pretty much affects you your whole life. How old were you when your parents realized that there was something that you weren't developing like other kids?
So normally kids tend to walk around anywhere between a year and 15 months old, and I wasn't walking. So it was, I think, around two that my parents said, you know, like, this is not normal and we need to get it looked at. And it actually wasn't until the second doctor that they found out I had CP, because the first doctor basically told my parents that I was going through a phase.
Okay.
my parents being my parents, they got a second opinion, and we ended up seeing a second doctor. And before he did any tests or scans, he said, I'm 99.9% sure she's got cerebral palsy. And so that's how they found out. And we went from there.
Your parents really have to be such strong advocates for you when you're at a really young age. And it sounds like they did that for you.
Yeah, I'm very lucky. I think I'm blessed in my life period. I've always had a really good family. They've always been there for me. So I feel very supported. I think I felt like that at every stage in my life.
And I'm sure that's going to come up in just a moment as we get into the crux of the Awkward Ballerina. What does it mean for you, though, in your day-to-day life right now as an adult to be living with cerebral palsy?
It's definitely challenging. I think every stage of my life has had a challenge. And as I became older and more aware, I guess you become more aware of those challenges. As an adult, I've had some new things emerge. Like I was pregnant. I had a son, and that was very difficult. The pregnancy was very difficult and left me with, I already have back problems. So after my pregnancy, those back problems just became even more severe. And I realized that, you know, doing the things I used to do isn't as easy as it was to deal with the winter weather, the cold in the winter, and the ice, the fact that I have trouble with my balance. So these things have become more challenging. And in the last couple of years, I ended up with some hearing loss. So I ended up with hearing aids, which I didn't realize were was part of dealing with, you know, living with cerebral palsy, but it happens to be very common. And so now I'm wearing hearing aids. So that was something I had to adapt to. And I still am 2 years later adapting to that, because it's a different thing when you're trying to hear your kid and you don't hear them the way you want to, or, you know, people are calling out to you and you're asking them to repeat over and over again. But I mean, I feel very blessed, because I think with every challenge, I always have tried to find the silver lining. And so, you know, it could be worse.
You have such, I can already tell just how resolute you are, resilient you are as a person. And I'm sure that comes to the fore in the story that you weave. So tell me about the Awkward Ballerina. Is it based entirely on what you were going through as a kid?
Yeah, so it is. All the stories are true stories. They're all things that happen 100%. The reason it's called the Awkward Ballerina is because when I was very young, I wanted to be a ballet dancer. And of course, living with cerebral palsy, that was not something that I was going to be, that was not a goal I was going to be able to achieve, not with the physical limitations that I have. So, but my parents were always very encouraging. So, you know, they tried to enforce that, you know, anything I set my mind to, I could do. And I've always lived by that. So I guess the stories revolve around my childhood, the challenges I faced, the bullies I dealt with, and I had a lot of them, and I still have them today. So I talk about that. I talk about the past. I talk about the present. I talk about when I was young and the different challenges, the different things I wanted to try. I joined a soccer team. I joined choir. I joined a bunch of musical theater and different things like that, because I always had this love for the stage. And so I figured, you know, if I can't be a dancer, well then I'll at least make it on that stage at some point. So I talk about all of these things, these goals that I had for myself, the challenges that would sometimes, you know, end up hitting me without realization, and then I would have to overcome those. I just did this show because I wanted people to understand that despite obstacles, you can do the things you want to do. Maybe they have to be a little different, but you can do them. And so that was the whole premise of this show. And for people to understand that, you know, everybody has things. We all have things, and we all have to live with those things, whatever they are. And you just have to be kind, because you don't know what that person is living with. And I felt like, especially with the last couple of years and the things we've been going through, that the world really needs that. The world really needs kindness and hope. So this story has been important to me for a long time. And 17 years later, I decided to write it during the pandemic. So I'm hoping that it offers comfort to those who deal with similar situations. And it also opens people's minds to what some people have to live with on a day-to-day.
That is Kristen Govers, who is presenting The Awkward Ballerina. It was a Fringe play that she performed in June, so 2 months ago, and now it is coming to the Pauline Julien Theater in Pierrefonds, Roxborough, where she happened to have grown up. So Kristen, as a child, you're dealing with motor issues. You had trouble walking when you were much younger, a toddler, and that's how you got to your diagnosis. But what was it about ballet that like inspired you? Do you think you wanted to do that in spite of, you know, the physical difficulties you were dealing with, or did you just want to be like, you know, performing and, you know, being in the limelight? What was it for you?
I mean, I grew up with a family, my dad's side of the family, they were very musical. My grandfather played piano. My dad plays piano. They were in musical theater. And so I saw that growing up. And so, yes, it's definitely a love for that. It's definitely a love for music, for theater, for the arts. But I also think that I was always drawn to things that were more difficult for me. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because I had those limitations that I felt, you know, hey, I'm going to do that. If that person can do it, so can I. I mean, I talk about it in my show. I joined soccer, had limits there, and I still wanted to do it 2 seasons in a row. I wanted to ski, even though that was not something that was recommended to me. I wanted to get on a pair of skates. I wanted to snowboard. So anything that was maybe considered more difficult or more challenging for me, I kind of wanted to beat the odds. And never with it ending very, very gracefully. But I guess I felt like, hey, I'm going to try this anyways, and we'll see how it goes. Maybe it'll work out.
What did your physical limitations mean for actual like practicing of ballet? Were you able to kind of follow along in class? Like, did you join a class? What was that like?
So no, the thing is, my mom had looked into it, but because, and I don't know what it's like today, but back then that kind of stuff didn't happen. If you had a limitation like that, it was sort of like, well, no, she has to audition and there's no way that's going to happen for her. Right. So, and that's unfortunate, but you know, we've come a long way. Today I see that those kind of things are much more accepting. People are much more accepting and they make room for everybody. But I think that back then it wasn't something that was offered to me, right? It wasn't something that was made accessible to me. And we still have a long way to go with that, I think, in respect to a lot of things.
Yeah. That is Kristen Govers, who is presenting her show, The Awkward Ballerina. It is a solo performance. Do you think it's easier for kids nowadays who are growing up with cerebral palsy to embark on different things? Like, is that something you might have noticed?
I don't know if I would say I noticed that specifically. I would just say that I noticed that accessibility is becoming more recognized. People are thinking about it more, you know? Oh, maybe we should put an elevator. Maybe we should put a ramp. You know, when I started high school, no one asked me about that. But then when I ended up moving and we ended up changing, I changed high school, and they asked me, they said, you know, they were asking if you would go around and tell us what we're missing in our school for someone that might need accessibility. And so I spent the day going around and telling them, well, you don't have any ramps in the bathroom, like any bars in the bathroom. Your stalls are small. You don't have a ramp for a wheelchair. You know, if there's a second floor, there's no elevator. You know, how is a wheelchair supposed to get into the library? It's not, the entrance isn't wide enough. There was a bunch of things. These doors aren't automatic. So, and I think when I, at the end of it, they just kind of looked at me and said, wow, like we didn't realize, you know? And so for me, and for me who isn't in a wheelchair, I felt like it was so important because I knew more about living with CP and what it was, and I had learned from my parents and I learned from the doctors that, hey, it's not so bad for me, but there's other people that have it, you know, way worse. And they want to feel important. They should feel important. I would want to feel important. So I think that in terms of accessibility, we are getting better. There is a lack of it in places, I think, but I think it's just a matter of time and eventually these things will. And this is the whole point of the show, too, is to open this kind of dialogue, right?
Yeah, and to educate people, because I think once you get to learn about whatever condition, whatever life experience someone is going through, you carry that with you as an audience member for the rest of your life, that you have that kind of a bit of an opening more to your mind. If you didn't know someone who had CP, for example, beforehand, now you carry it with you. Speaking with Kristen Govers, talking about Awkward Ballerina, performed next week in Pierrefonds. Kristen, you mentioned earlier on that this was a pandemic play for you. Was it just a matter of having extra time on your hands and kind of, you know, something maybe you always toyed with and now you finally had an opportunity to put it to paper? Or was this just something that came up spontaneously for you?
Well, I studied English literature, which was always something I wanted to do because I love to write. And that is probably the second love of my life. So there was dancing and then there was writing. And I always tried to find time to write, but then, you know, life gets in the way. And I got a job as an editor and I worked as an editor for 6 years. And during the pandemic, I worked crazy hours and I decided I'm tired. I'm not enjoying my job and I'm losing out on my creative spark. So I quit my job during the pandemic. I joined a workshop with TJ Daw, who's pretty well known and
well-known solo performer. Yeah.
Super, super talented and super wonderful human being. So I joined his workshop and I wrote my play while I was in his workshop. The first draft of my play. And yes, this idea has been around for about 17 years. I wrote this with the idea of turning it into a book because it came from a short story that I had written. And they're just very personal stories. So I found it challenging to dig into that. TJ helps and the artists that I worked with over the span of time I was in the workshop, everyone was so wonderful. And it just kind of helped to open up those wounds, I should say, it helped to open them up. And I felt like, you know, if I don't do this, I'm going to regret it because it's always something that I've wanted to share with people. And so, yeah, so I wrote the show and now I'm just hoping that goal of spreading that awareness and promoting anti-bullying and getting people to come together, that goal comes true, you know.
You mentioned your son earlier on, he's 4. Did he come see the performance last summer?
Yeah, so he did. He was at my first show and he was wonderful. He actually sat through the whole thing and people were impressed that he had the attention span for a 4-year-old. But he walks around and tells everybody that I'm the awkward ballerina.
Oh.
So
it's a story that starts with your parents, you know, intervening when they realize you're not walking as you should. And now your own son is getting to see you on stage in the spotlight, telling your own story. That's so meaningful.
Yeah, it's for me, it's so important for me that he sees this too. That's young people, you know, I think this story is important for young people. And that's why I also wrote it in respect to younger people as well, because I figured this wasn't just important for just anybody, you know, doesn't really have an age group, but that young people could get a lot from this. They go to high school, they go to grade school. Some of them deal with, you know, disabilities. Some of them don't, but some of them are bullied. Some of them, you know. Some of them deal with kids making fun of the fact that they have glasses or braces or, you know, and these are just, so it deals with all of these issues. It encompasses all of these issues. And I feel like it's important for young people to see this because not only can they relate or possibly relate to it, but they can also use this story when they get into a situation where they might do something they shouldn't and think about it twice.
Kristen, it's been an absolute pleasure getting to know you and to hear your story. Thank you so much for coming on Upstage.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Kristen Govers discussing her one-woman show, documenting her childhood and part of her adulthood with cerebral palsy, and how she balanced her body's limitations with her big ambitions. The show is Awkward Ballerina, and we spoke ahead of her post-fringe remount in Pierrefonds in early September. You can visit Kristen online at Two Left Feet Productions, MTL, on Facebook and on Instagram. And Kristen is also working on a part 2 to The Awkward Ballerina, as well as a translation of the original work into French, as well as a book. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. Tonight, our final show of 2022. I've been revisiting three of my favorite interviews from the past year. Tonight, you heard Amir Haidar, who is a standby on the coming production of Come From Away, beginning January 10th to the 15th. He will be on stage for the show January 15th at Place des Arts. Tickets at Evenco.ca. One of my favorite performances this year was Jonathan Silver in The Covenant, an up-close look at a World War II ruse presented by Théâtre West End. Jonathan was my guest in November, as well as Kristen Govers, playwright and performer who chronicled her life with cerebral palsy in The Awkward Ballerina at the Fringe this year. A very big thank you to my guests. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at CKUT.ca under Archives. Follow us for updates, images of our guests, and more on Instagram at UpstageCKUT. Thank you to Jack Solar, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air. And a very big thank you to you for tuning in all this year. I'm your host, Sarah Day. Happy New Year's. Have fun and stay safe. Up next is Grey Matters with my friend, Fortner Anderson.
Good evening and welcome to the December 29th edition of Grey Matters. Tonight on the show we have a lecture by Sarah Lee Whitson. She's the executive director of DAWN, Democracy for the Arab World Now. Previously she was executive director of Human Rights Watch's Middle East and North Africa division from 2004 to 2020. She has led dozens of advocacy and investigative missions throughout the region, focusing on issues of armed conflict, accountability, legal reform, migrant workers, and human rights. She has published widely on human rights and foreign policy in the Middle East, in international and regional media, including the New York Times, Foreign Affairs, the Washington Post, and Foreign Policy. The title of her lecture tonight is Human Rights and Democracy in the Middle East. It was recorded in Denver, Colorado on December 1st of this year. So without further ado, here's tonight's lecture, Human Rights and Democracy in the Middle East. The lecturer, Sarah Lee Whitson.
There is no democracy in the Middle East. While women are technically now free to travel or open a bank account or obtain a job without the consent of a male guardian, they still can't get married without the consent of a male guardian. This is true in the UAE, this is true in